It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
You like fighting a woman?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo! I am a one-man wrecking crew.
This is episode 621 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, October 13, 2019. I am the Solid Monster. Numbers-wise, this was one of the biggest weeks in the history of the show, on YouTube, on social media, everywhere. So thank you for that. I know some of you have picked up the Soul Man Rocky Johnson story book on Audible for free using our trial. Keep doing that. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Doesn't have to be the Rocky Johnson book, by the way. That's the newest wrestling book to come out on Audible. There's any number of books, wrestling or otherwise, that you can cash in on. 30-day trial. So hit that link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. We got a couple of Halloween shirts up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. If you order them now, you should get them before Halloween, but you're cutting it close. So if you've been thinking about it, jump on that this week. And if you want to donate via PayPal, you may do so at any time on thesolomonster.com. PayPal button's on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. Thank you to the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton as we quickly go through roll call here. John Luce Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Bangkok Bandit, Nipit Viramatikal. See, I'm getting better at that. I'm getting better at saying some of these names. Other names I might be getting worse. Some of them I'm getting better. Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Fast Blast, Tim Banks, Killshot, Keith Hart, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichert, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Stephen Handyman, Halistic, The Rabbit King, Christian Dye, Interfere and I'll Kill You, Inga Wabu, and in honor of the release of the new Breaking Bad movie, El Camino, and Jesse Pinkman, of course, we've got Jose, Yeah Bitch, Pilly. I can't do it the way that Jesse Pinkman does. It's too early in the morning for me to go full Pinkman, so that's the best you got out of me. Delirious Damian T. Robinson, Josh the Shooter Stockton, FGC Hitman Christian Reyes, Jake the World Wonder Winans, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soap, Barry M. the Barbarian, Ryan Sorensen, the Senator, Matt Tyndall, hi, I'm Chris Evans, and Ali. Thank you all. Sarah, I want to say thank you to you for the birthday card. That was very nice of you, 2 years in a row. Douglas the Big Dog Delgadillo. I heard through the grapevine that Dizzle turned 27 on Friday, and that Roman Reigns is his number one draft pick. So I've heard. I hope you had a great birthday. From iTunes, want to say thank you to Chris from Memphis for dropping a review. He's been a listener since 2014. Adorable Adamar Garcia, thank you. And this was not on iTunes, but I wanted to share it anyway. This is from Flint, all the way in Zimbabwe. He says, my country relies on hydropower, and due to the drought that we faced, the source of power was no longer viable, and as a country, we started experiencing blackouts of up to 18 hours. As you can guess, I have not been watching Raw and SmackDown since, but with the sound off, I'm well taken care of. I download it at a parking lot of a shop where there is free 30 minutes of Wi-Fi. I'm sure those who see me think I'm some sort of drug dealer, but for the sound off, I'll take it. See, we have listeners from all around the world. He's the third person, though, that I have heard from in Zimbabwe in the last 12 years of me doing this show. And I love stuff like that. And Flint, by the way, I did include your buy or sell question in this week's Sound Off Inbox premiere, which I'll plug a little bit more later. It's up on YouTube right now, so you can go check that out. You may have heard the news that Master P, rap artist, record producer, entrepreneur, is back in the pro wrestling business. He had a very brief stint in WCW in its dying days with his No Limit Soldiers. Now he is back in wrestling after purchasing House of Glory Wrestling, the same House of Glory I've had the privilege of doing color commentary for. My first taste of it was over a year ago. I was invited to take part in a special pre-show panel as part of their big High Intensity 7 event in the summer. And this past summer, we just had High Intensity 8. And I had the chance to call my first match later that same night. And I've called a lot more since then. I've had the chance to call Private Parties matches, LAX, the Lucha Bros, the Young Bucks, and a lot of names that you have not heard of. But you will. You will soon. These last two events, I've had the chance to call the entire show with JD from NY. A good old-fashioned two-man booth. And he does a hell of a job. It's been a fun ride. Over the last year plus, it's been a fun ride. The people who work there, I have to say, you know, they bust their ass. And I can honestly say they make HOG the best independent promotion anywhere up and down the East Coast. And among the best anywhere in the country. And now that promotion is owned by Master P, who plans to bring hip-hop culture to pro wrestling. He's got a lot of big ideas. He's investing in the company, which means big things are on the horizon. New equipment for us, possibly TV, new stars, new signings. There's a lot of ideas on the table right now. Some that I'm privy to, a lot that I'm not. It's pretty exciting stuff. And the resources that he brings with him is going to take HOG to that next level. Where all of this goes, I have no idea. I hope I can continue to contribute and be part of something that feels like it's on the verge of really breaking out in 2020. I'm looking forward to being on the call for the next show, No Limits, which is coming up on November 16th. Kurt Angle is going to be doing a special meet and greet. TJP is going to be in action, and a lot more yet to be announced. I hope some of you will be able to make it out to the next show and say hello. Hell in a Cell was last Sunday. The less said about that main event, the better. I think I made my opinion of it very clear from my live stream, which had a live audience of over 4,000 viewers at its peak, which for a stream is huge. It ended up with over 86,000 views. We had over 7,700 people respond to my Twitter poll with a ratio of 9% thumbs up to 91% thumbs down, which, believe it or not, is not the most lopsided poll I've ever done, but it's close. It's close. It's in the conversation. I don't remember offhand which one was worse. I just know that there was at least one that was. The opening and closing matches of that show were like the tale of two cities. You know, if Hell in a Cell was a sandwich, and that opener with Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks was the top bun, you know, you have this beautiful brioche bun, and the bottom bun was the main event, it would be like a moldy blue and green bun that was about 6 months beyond its expiration date. Even Brazzers could not resist getting a money shot in on WWE when this pay-per-view was over on Twitter. This is this week's sad tweet. Hey, WWE, let us know if you need advice on how to craft logical and coherent storylines with satisfying finishes. That was an even better, that's an even better tweet than that birthday shout-out they randomly gave me 3 years ago. Cody Rhodes was interviewed on the Joe Cronin Show in advance of AEW's trip to Boston, and he was asked about the AEW chance at the arena when the Hell in a Cell main event went off as it did. And he said he was flattered by the chance at the end of the show. He was not going to celebrate it. He was not going to gloat about it because he claimed that one of the people in that match got concussed. Now, I'm not sure if that's true or not, because even though he didn't wrestle the next night, they did have Bray Wyatt attack Cesaro after the show was over. And he did the same thing again on SmackDown to Seth Rollins, and Rollins wrestled Roman Reigns on Friday night. So either Cody got his lines crossed, or maybe WWE feared that one of them, I'm guessing if it was one of them, it probably was Bray Wyatt, may have suffered a concussion. But since then, he's passed all of their tests. That's the only thing I can come up with. But that was a bit of news that he dropped there about there being a possible concussion coming out of that Hell in a Cell main event. It sounds to me like whoever came up with that match and put that match together was likely concussed, and hopefully they are also undergoing that same impact testing. Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful was the first person who I saw report that Vince McMahon was seen in the back when the show was over last Sunday, laughing about the crowd reaction to that finish. Meltzer, he reported the same thing in this week's Observer. Heard it from a bunch of different people that Vince McMahon was seen laughing about it. Now, if that doesn't tell you what he and his cronies think about fan feedback, then I don't know what could possibly change your mind. That says it all. His original idea for the match, Vince McMahon's original idea for the match, was said to have been The Fiend taking a giant bump off the top of the cell. So I guess think Rikishi, maybe, taking a big gimmick bump onto a flatbed truck or something hokey like that. But he would take a big bump off the top of the cage. The match would then be stopped because he would be unable to continue. And then he would do the Undertaker zombie sit-up and he would put the man... Well, I mean, you know, the Michael Myers zombie sit-up that the Undertaker stole. Let's just be honest here. And then he would put the mandible claw on Seth Rollins to end the show. Now, people mark. They mark out hard for big bumps off that cage. So I don't doubt that it would have been a better, more well-received finish had they gone with the original plan. But here's the thing that people are overlooking here. That would have... The idea that that would have been this much better finish, the end result is the same. You've now had two straight years of non-finishes in one of your trademark matches that is supposed to have a finish, because there are not supposed to be much in the way of rules. It's pinfall, it's submission, anything goes, weapons, people are bleeding, they're raking their opponent's face across the cage like a cheese grater, chairs and tables and ladders and pipes and all kinds of weapons, sledgehammers. 2 years in a row of main event Hell in a Cell finishes with no winner. He could have done a cannonball off the top of the arena. That would not have made it a better finish. Both ideas sucked. They have killed the Hell in a Cell stipulation. That is the point that people are overlooking here. Don't make excuses for them. You book a Hell in a Cell match, there should be a finish, or at the very least, if you're going to come up with a non-finish, don't repeat it 2 years in a row. I mean, hey, if you have an idea that that's that great, all right, if you think it's that great, then go for it. But 2 years in a row of this nonsense. And still, there are people making excuses for them. And then I have to listen to stupid shit like this from this new internet show from WWE called The Bump. It's Kayla Braxton and a bunch of random people talking about WWE. This one guy, wrote his name down here, Dan Volmer, I think is his name. No idea who he is. He's supposed to be a comedian, I guess. That's what his bio says, he's a comedian. This was his defense of the Hell in a Cell finish.
You know, I think I'm probably in the minority here, but I think the referee did exactly what he had to do in that moment. He has that shield on his chest, which has been ironed on, the WWE logo. If he's looking at this match in its entirety, in this moment, there's a man down on the ground, incapacitated. What are you supposed to do? People argue, oh, well, at King of the Ring, when Mankind got thrown off the top by The Undertaker, the match continued. That was a long time ago. This is 2019.
It's 2019 is not an argument. You putz. So now WWE is using their new show to indirectly shit on the fans. They won't do it themselves. You know, Vince will laugh about it behind her back. Ha ha ha. He'll have a good laugh about it behind the scenes. But they don't have the balls to do it themselves publicly, so they'll let a bunch of hosts do it who we've never heard of before. I've seen enough of The Bump after that. I've bumped it from my lineup of things to watch each week in favor of cat videos and Rex Chapman's Twitter feed, which is maybe the best follow on all of Twitter. I also had time to record another Sound of Extra review for Mundane Night Raw, a show where absolutely nothing of note happened beyond a pull-apart at the end of the show between Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman. Over 35,000 views on that. You can go back and check that out. My Twitter poll was not kind to that show. We had over 5,400 votes for Raw Monday Night. Just 13% said thumbs up. 87% of you said thumbs down. It was a lame duck show. That was the best, most apt description I can come up with for what we saw on Monday night. It was a lame duck show. Going into the WWE draft, the first night of which is now in the books. But before I get to the draft, WWE held a press conference on Friday in Las Vegas before SmackDown to announce their top two matches for Sweet Saudi Money 4. It will be Brock Lesnar defending the WWE Championship. And yes, it is a title match, even though they didn't mention it during the press conference. It has since been confirmed that it is a title match. He will be defending the title against Kane Velasquez. And Braun Strowman will take on the lineal heavyweight champion of boxing, Tyson Fury. I watched the press conference live. Yeah, I do like the idea of them attempting to do things that are more realistic. I like, in theory, the idea of them doing more realistic press conferences. I'm all for more realism, but whatever this was, this ain't it. This was just overly scripted, very awkward. Kane looked like he was nervous or he forgot his lines. These long 15-second pauses between what he was trying to say. He had this look on his face like, where am I? They had Bob Arum come out and talk. He spoke mostly about the failed Evel Knievel jump over Snake River Canyon in 1974 that a young Vince McMahon promoted. Arum was a silent investor in that. Vince lost $250,000 on that stunt. I'm sure he was thrilled to hear Arum bring that up. Brock, at least, when he came out to speak, we had Brock in a suit and Heyman was standing off to the side, and so Brock actually had to say a few words, which is rare. And he even commented, he said, normally when I come out and do these things, I have Paul do the talking for me, but I guess I have to say something. And Brock, at least, made it feel like he has really been waiting 9 years to get his revenge on the man who put that giant scar on his face in UFC. You know that things aren't going too well when Brock is probably the best talker of anybody who came out that day. And Tyson Fury is actually a great talker, and Braun Strowman, he's very articulate. But there was so much awkwardness. The only person who came off to me as being genuine, who I could possibly buy into what he was saying, was Brock Lesnar, of all people. So they've got their two big WrestleMania matches on the show that they have told us in the past is as big or bigger than WrestleMania, so it should be no question as to why they're doing this now. This show is even bigger than WrestleMania, so why wouldn't they do it in Saudi Arabia? Velasquez has retired from MMA. He has signed what is said to be a lucrative multi-year deal with WWE, this according to Mark Raimondi of ESPN. I never bought into that nonsense about him shooting that angle last week on TV without having signed a deal. That would be business malpractice for them to do that. You know, they do a lot of stupid shit creatively. We could rail on WWE all day long and all the stupid ideas they come up with. Business-wise, when it comes to stuff like this and contracts and whatnot, they run a very tight ship. So that never made any sense to me. With this being a title match, Kane's not winning the title. I mean, hey, never say never, but I guess, but Kane is not winning that title, which means that he's going to lose his first match or they do some kind of fuck finish. You know, maybe they're just getting this match out of the way. I was thinking about this. Maybe they're just getting this match out of the way first, besides the money, so that Kane could just come back with a mask on and play some kind of lucha superhero. Supposedly, that was the rumor. That's what he wanted to do. He was talking to AEW and WWE. He wanted to keep the mask on because he's only wrestled two matches in his life. He made his in-ring debut. His very first pro wrestling match was in August. He wrestled for Triple Mania. In AAA, and he had a lucha mask on. He was busting out Hurricanranas. And apparently he wanted to keep the mask on and play some kind of lucha superhero. Maybe that's what he wants. So they're just burning through this match first, and he's going to go away, and maybe he'll come back with a mask on. Which I think would be dumb, because whatever name value he has, I don't know why you would put a fucking mask on the guy. I'm just trying to come up with other reasons why they would burn this match so quickly. You know what? I guess at the end of the day, it really does just come down to money. And that's why they're doing what they're doing. Strowman and Fury, Fury's not losing that match. If you think Tyson Fury, this undefeated boxing champion, is going to lose a match to Braun Strowman, you're out of your freaking mind. Just like Floyd Mayweather wasn't losing to the Big Show. And honestly, it's Braun Strowman. So him losing, it doesn't even matter. So for those wondering how it might affect SmackDown, because this show is airing, it's taking place in Riyadh on Halloween. Halloween is on a Thursday this year, October 31st. How might this affect SmackDown the next day? WWE is going to be chartering a flight for the crew from Riyadh all the way to Buffalo. So SmackDown will proceed as usual that Friday. Riyadh to Buffalo. I wonder if JetBlue runs that route. The other match already signed for Crown Jewel 2, Electric Boogaloo, is Team Hogan against Team Flair. We don't yet know all the members other than it's going to be Seth Rollins captaining Team Hogan. We've got Randy Orton captaining Team Flair. And while he is not wrestling there, Hulk Hogan gave an interview to the LA Times earlier this week pitching for one last match. He is pitching for a retirement match, and he is pitching for a retirement match against Vince McMahon. A combined 140 years between the two of these men on this earth. He also buried the shit out of Impact. This is what he said. He said, I talked to Vince, and I said, I really don't know if I could live with myself, knowing that my last match was with TNA. If I can get my back fixed, I pray that I can have one more match. I told Vince, when I get through this back surgery, I'm going to get in the best shape of my life, and we're going to talk about me having one last retirement match, implying that there have been multiple retirement matches. I'd love for it to be against Vince. I had such a great time against him in the ring at WrestleMania 19. I had no idea what to expect from him, but he's a great bad guy. His timing is great. I loved wrestling him, but everything he does hurts. When you're in the ring with someone and they're hurting you, you kind of pinch them on the wrist. That whole match, I was doing that to Vince. I was like, Vince, take it easy. Everything he does hurts, but I would love to get back in the ring with him one more time for my last match. That would be perfect. Hulk Hogan is 66 years old. And I will say that if you look at Hogan, aside from the fake hair, which he admits is fake, and the tan and the leathery skin and everything else, he keeps himself in very good shape. He still goes and hits the gym. He's got the big pythons. They may not be 24 inches anymore, but he's got the big guns. So I'm not even saying that Hogan, isn't, quote, in shape. Most people will not look the way that he looks at 66 years old. So let me just say that first. But he is 66 years old. And he is about to undergo his 10th back surgery. Let me repeat that. 10th back surgery. I don't know if he's doing it before Crown Jewel, if he's going to wait until after Crown Jewel, but he has admitted that he's about to go under the knife yet again because his back is so screwed up. I don't ever need to see him in the ring wrestling ever again, whether he takes bumps or not, and he would not. I can't see how he would even be able to take any kind of back bump or flat back bump. So it could just be a thing where people run in, Vince runs into his fist and the match ends in 15 seconds. I don't want to see that. Who wants to see this? Other than Hulk Hogan. His last match was on January 27, 2012. There was a six-man tag team match in TNA against the Aces and Eights the following year that I guess technically he was a part of. This would have been in 2013, but he didn't show up for it until the very end. And they did this angle where he was beaten up in the back so you didn't see it. And towards the end of the match, they dragged his dead carcass out onto the ramp. But he never actually wrestled. So I'm not even going to count that. January 27, 2012. In Manchester, England, it was Hulk Hogan, Sting, and James Storm against Kurt Angle, Bully Ray, and Bobby Roode. A match that Hogan's team won. The last big match, the last big singles match of Hogan's career that aired on pay-per-view was Bound for Glory, 2011 against Sting. a match that was better than it had any right to be. I was actively watching TNA at the time, and I remember watching that match and thinking, I didn't expect that match. I mean, good is a relative term, but I didn't expect that match to be as good as it was. And Hogan took bumps. He took back bumps. He did the best that he could. He could barely move, but he did the best that he could. They both bled. It was like this old school double juice, you know, legends match, but the people ate it up. The people in the arena ate it up. And that was a match that Hogan lost. He submitted to the Scorpion Deathlock. He put the other guy over. I can understand him feeling like he never had the chance to go out on his own terms, on a really big stage, like at a WrestleMania, in the company that he called home for so many years. You know, were it not for Hogan, there wouldn't be a WrestleMania today. I firmly believe that. The guy headlined, technically he didn't headline four, although he was part of it. But the guy basically headlined what felt like the first seven or eight WrestleManias. You're going to tell me WrestleMania would be where it is today were it not for the star power of Hulk Hogan? You're crazy if you say otherwise. So, you know, give the guy his due. I can understand him feeling that way. But I got to tell you, I got to stick up for TNA on this. And I'm not sticking up for the current regime or anything like that, because there's a lot of things going on right now that are very unbecoming when it comes to Anthem and the stuff with Killer Cross and all that. But I will stick up for TNA, you know, back then on this. For about 3 years, Impact was the Hulk Hogan show. They gave him a big contract. I don't know how much he made, but believe me, he was not working for TNA for chump change. So they paid him good money, they gave him a big contract, and he basically dominated the show. He didn't do much in the way of wrestling, although he did wrestle a little bit. But he was more just a character on the show, and he went back from babyface to heel, back to babyface. It was the Hogan and Bischoff show for a period of about 3 years. He was all over that show. And that Bound for Glory match, if that is the last memory that people have of him in the ring, that is not a bad way for him to go out. He took bumps, he put the other guy over. They had a match where they didn't completely embarrass themselves. I mean, Sting could still go at that point. It wasn't a matter of Sting looking all that bad. It was how good of a match can you get out of Hogan? Hogan gave the best that he could. And then when the match was over and Sting was being beaten down by Ric Flair and beaten down by Scott Steiner and beaten down by Bully Ray and Gunner. Yeah, which one of these doesn't belong? Sting's a bloody mess. He's crawling over. He's clawing at Hogan's legs. Hogan, help me, help me. Hogan looks to the crowd. The crowd is starting to, you know, they're starting to get all amped up. They know what's coming. This is back when Impact had crowds. And the people went ape shit when Hogan ripped his shirt off, bloody and all, and he hulked up. People went crazy. He turned babyface. And it was a genuinely great moment. Those are the best moments in wrestling, when you have a big angle or a big turn like that, and the crowd is into it. And Hogan's had a lot of them in his career. Look at WrestleMania 18 when he hulked up against The Rock. One of the greatest moments in WWE history. One of my greatest regrets. I wasn't going to WrestleManias back then. I would have loved to have been in the crowd for that. But this was a genuinely great moment. And he was in there with friends like Sting and Ric Flair and Eric Bischoff. So for him to say, I couldn't live with myself if my last match ends up being in TNA. Even if he is, maybe he's thinking of that six-man tag, you know, 2 months after this. Either way, that is a cheap shot. And it says more about Hogan, I think, than anything else that he would say something like that. As someone who grew up a Hogan fan, grew up a Hulkamaniac, and who used to buy the action figures and all that when I was younger, I would much rather have that be my lasting memory of Hulk Hogan's final match than him barely able to walk, embarrassing himself in the ring with another senior citizen who has no business being in the ring. Vince McMahon is 74 years old. Whatever Hulk did have left in the tank, we got that last little bit of it in TNA. That was 8 years ago. It's kind of like Kurt Angle. If you look at his WWE run, sad to say, but we got whatever was left in the tank for Kurt Angle, we got the last of it in TNA. because we never got to see the Kurt Angle even, you know, remotely resembling his old self in WWE. Unfortunately, his body just, you know, look, age and injuries, it catches up with everybody. Kurt Angle gave more years to TNA during that run than he ever had in WWE before, which is kind of crazy to think about. So, you know, a lot of these guys got, you know, the best of their final years in the ring. Maybe you want to throw Sting in there too, came in TNA. And Hogan is among those people. Whatever he had left, he left there. He did have and that was 8 years ago. That match with Sting was 8 years ago. He was 8 years younger at that point. And he still looked old, but he was 8 years younger. Since he's come back to WWE, he had a great WrestleMania moment in the ring with Stone Cold and The Rock in New Orleans, one of the great WrestleMania segments, having those three in the ring together at the same time. You know, the following year, WrestleMania, he came out, he reunited, got a big pop with his NWO buddies for that big, you know, run-in in the Sting and Triple H match. The man is in so much constant pain, he is allowing his doctors to rip open his back for a 10th time. Some of these guys need to know when to just let it go. And I hope that Vince McMahon has enough sense to say, listen, I'm old as shit. I don't need to be in the ring anymore, and neither do you. And he puts an end to this little fantasy once and for all. Friday night on SmackDown was opening night for the 2019 WWE Draft. Night 2 is coming up on Raw tomorrow night. In-ring-wise, there was some good stuff on Friday, and the full heel turn of Bayley at the end, which was great. As a draft show, and as a show overall, I thought it sucked. And the wild card rule is a very big part of why. Seeing people drafted to shows that they've already been on for months, you know, were it not for that stupid rule, it might have had a little more oomph to it, but the way they did the whole thing, having to watch these, and I don't even know if they were actual Fox executives or not, having to watch these Fox and these USA Network executives in their respective war rooms celebrating over people like Natalya and the Lucha House Party was some of the most cringeworthy cornball television that I have seen all year. Twitter poll had over 3,000 votes. 41% thumbs up, 59% thumbs down. Final numbers are not in yet, but the show lost about 1 million viewers from the Fox premiere. I mean, I knew it would be down from the premiere, but that's a steep drop. They did 3.8 million the week before, down to 2.8 million on Friday. Again, these were the preliminary numbers. I guess the final numbers will be out tomorrow. But that's 1 million people, almost 1 million people, who said, peace out, I've seen enough. But they held strong in the all-important 18 to 49 demo. In fact, nothing else on network television even came close to what SmackDown did in that demo on Friday night. And it was still, and this is important to keep in mind, besides the demo stuff, which I have to point out, but it's also important to keep this in mind too. For all the wrestling that we have every single week on TV, on YouTube, and all the different ways people can watch wrestling now, SmackDown, even if, like me, you thought overall the show was no good, it was still the most watched wrestling show all week long. Bigger than Raw, and way bigger than AEW or NXT. So everything is relative. You can say that, you know, well, they lost almost 1 million viewers. They did, but, and this would be kind of the other side of the coin that you have to point out, it wasn't all doom and gloom. Because you know the network is going to look at those demos and say, okay, hey, you know, we were number one for the night in this demo, and let's try to work on other areas. But like I said, I expected a drop, just like I expected a drop for AEW. And it was comical. I didn't have a lot, but there were a handful of people when I was saying that who said, you know, you're just hating. You're just hating on AEW. So on the one hand, I get people that say, you're just biased. You know, all you do is praise AEW. And then I get the people when I say, well, the ratings are probably going to drop this week. Oh, you're just a hater. You want to see it fail. I think the brain malfunction that these people are suffering from, I believe it might be fixable if they can get to a doctor quick enough. They might be able to rewire some shit in these people's brains. I don't know. It's possible they're brain damaged beyond repair. For their sake and their family's sake, I hope not. I hope they can get the help they need. And I hope they can stay the hell off my timeline and stop tweeting stupid shit to me. This is the kind of nonsense I have to hear every single week. It's comical. It's either extreme in one direction or it's extreme in the other direction. And I always say this, when I get feedback like that, that is so different, that is so like polar opposite, all it does is reinforce that I am right in the middle. Exactly what I say. Fair, right down the middle. Because if you're getting feedback on both sides of the coin, that means you're doing something right. People don't like hearing facts. They don't like hearing reality. They don't like, you know, they're kind of all caught up in this fantasy world where everything is just roses and flowers and everything is great. And then when you try to inject a little bit of reality into it, oh, they don't like that very much. You know, it's like we live in a fact-free world all of a sudden. Not here. Not here you don't. But like I said, expected a drop. I didn't expect it to be a million. That's not good to lose that many people in 1 week. The press release that WWE put out earlier in the day on their website about the draft listing all the eligible names turned out to be a spoiler on the draft order. I would say a good 97% of the order as it was listed played out exactly that way on television. And there were eligibility pools for each night of the draft. That's why the champions like Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar were not drafted, because it would have made no sense not to draft them if you were Fox or USA executives, but they were not eligible on Friday night. They will be eligible on Raw tomorrow night. At least they explained that. No NXT involvement at all this year in the draft. They had war rooms set up with people they claim were executives from Fox and USA Network who would celebrate after each pick. They would pump their fist in the air. They would scream and cheer and holler and jump up and down. You would think that the ball had dropped and it was New Year's Eve. And that's fine if you're drafting Roman Reigns or Bray Wyatt to your show. But again, when they got the people like Natty, to show these people wetting themselves is completely preposterous. And it is so hokey and over the top that any chance of this really coming off and making it feel more real and more genuine just went right out the window. Because who could possibly look at that and take any of this shit seriously? In the Fox War Room, they had someone in costume as the Fox NFL Sunday robot high-fiving people after each pick. The robot should have been eligible. The robot against the Fiend. That's a money feud. I'll take the robot over Seth Rollins in there against Bray Wyatt. So for every two picks that SmackDown got in the draft, Raw would get three. Since Raw is 3 hours and SmackDown is only two, so I guess one pick for each hour. They had cut-ins throughout the show with all the Fox Network stars and all the Fox Network analysts, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman in the booth. They had them record some stuff. Joe Buck was instantly the biggest heel on the show the moment they showed him on screen. Got boos in the building. And it gave me great pleasure watching him have to shill for WWE because you know that he was dying on the inside having to do that. You know that people like Joe Buck and people like Colin Cowherd, who for years would say the stupidest shit and the most disrespectful things, more so Colin. I don't know that Joe Buck has ever said anything disrespectful about wrestling. I could have sworn he may have made like an offhanded comment once. I don't get the sense he's a very big wrestling fan, not of the current product anyway, so that's why I say I'm sure he was dying a little bit on the inside. But someone like Colin Cowherd, who has said some really stupid offensive shit on his show over the years when it comes to wrestling and the death of Eddie Guerrero and some of the, you know, other things as well. And now to see him hobnobbing with the WWE stars and putting over WWE. Oh, it's great. I mean, it's nauseating, but it's great to have to see them sell their soul and do that. Because you know on the inside, they're just dying a little bit each day that they have to do it. But that's part of the Fox family synergy now. They all have to put over pro wrestling, whether they like it or not. So they went to the other analysts and they had, I think, I forgot the other names. It's the people that you would see on Fox NFL Sunday and shows like them. I think Strahan maybe was in there, Terry Bradshaw, and they're talking about their favorite stars, and they're talking about people from 30 and 40 years ago. They're putting over Bruno Sammartino and Dusty Rhodes and Andre the Giant and Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, all names from decades ago. And I, you know, look, I get that a lot of them are old enough that those are the names they would have known when they were that young or that they grew up on, maybe when they used to be big wrestling fans. I understand that. But boy, does it make this current generation of stars from the last 5, 10, 15 years look like a bunch of chumps. So these were the Monday Night Raw picks in the order in which they were selected. Going to Monday Night Raw, Becky Lynch, who is the Raw Women's Champion, AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson, so the entire OC kept together, Drew McIntyre, and I will say this, if they are done with Rollins and The Fiend, and you would never think so based on what they did on Friday, but I'll talk about The Fiend here in a second, but with this split and The Fiend going somewhere else, if they are done with that feud, McIntyre, I think, should be next in line to go after the Universal title. If not now, then when? They keep saying, oh, he's got world champion written all over him. I've been hearing this for 2 years. I mean, how much longer are they going to wait? Randy Orton now back on Monday Night Raw. Ricochet, Bobby Lashley, Alexa Bliss. Kevin Owens is back on Monday Night Raw after working so hard to rid SmackDown of Shane McMahon now for months and then beating Shane and firing him on television. Kevin Owens gets drafted to Monday Night Raw. And I said this on Twitter. I saw Bruce Mitchell told me that I wasn't being helpful by tweeting this, but so, you know, you can blame me if this happens. In a swerve, Shane McMahon reemerges on Monday Night Raw, having been fired from SmackDown, and proceeds to feud with Kevin Owens for another 6 months. Now, I know they said that he was fired from WWE, but this is WWE. I mean, come on now. I would say the majority of people listening to this show right now have every expectation that Shane McMahon at some point soon is going to end up on Monday Night Raw. So get ready. This feud may not be over yet. For what it's worth, Owens tweeted that WWE's digital team asked him for his thoughts on being drafted to Raw. He said that he gave them a very honest, heartfelt answer, and they decided against posting the footage because, in their view, he appeared to be angry. He says he was angry. He still is angry about being drafted in the third round. Looks like I still have lots to prove, he said. Now that came off to me as storyline, but I wouldn't doubt if he was upset about being so low in the draft and bumped back over to Monday Night Raw after having established himself as a babyface, one of the bigger babyfaces on that SmackDown brand. SmackDown clearly now is going to be the A show. I think we can basically, you know, going forward, Monday Night Raw is no longer the A show. The A show now is SmackDown. The A show is on Fox. And I don't mean in terms of quality necessarily, but just in terms of how important the show is and how they position it. For the first time, I would say, since 2003, SmackDown is back to being the A show in WWE. So I don't doubt that Owens might actually feel that way and might be upset that he was drafted back to Raw. He might feel like he isn't fully being appreciated for what he brings to the table. The silver lining is that had he stayed on SmackDown with Brock Lesnar being the WWE champion, he would not have sniffed the top title on that brand. On Raw, at least he has a shot at some point to wrestle for the championship, maybe even win it. That's assuming that Brock doesn't get drafted back over to Raw tomorrow night. Other names going to Raw. Natalya, which the Fox Network executives, or USA, I should say. Well, Fox, maybe they were happy. They were happy to get rid of, happy to not pick her. I don't know. But boy, they were celebrating. They were popping some of the bubbly like this was such a big deal. So Cat Lady is coming to Raw, the Viking Raiders, Nikki Cross, and the Street Profits. And here's my question about the Street Profits. Were they drafted to actually wrestle, or were they drafted to just continue to do cornball comedy on TV? Because each week that I see the Street Profits on Raw, I actually see them getting less over as the weeks go on. So I think it's about time they get in the ring and show us what they got there. Now, SmackDown. Here are the SmackDown picks in the order in which they were selected. Roman Reigns, the number one pick on SmackDown. Bray Wyatt is now on SmackDown Live, and that's important to note because in the graphic that they showed on screen, they showed Mr. Rogers looking Bray Wyatt. They called him Bray Wyatt. They did not call him The Fiend. Michael Cole made a comment about, well, I guess where Bray Wyatt goes, so goes The Fiend. But The Fiend was not drafted to SmackDown. Bray Wyatt was drafted to SmackDown. Now, this might explain why he didn't win the championship at Hell in a Cell. Again, this does not excuse the finish they did at the pay-per-view. I don't want to hear that from people either. Well, you see, in the end, it all makes sense. The fans got it wrong, because if Bray was going to go to SmackDown, it wouldn't make any sense for him to win the Universal title. Hey, numbnuts, I got a better question for you. What sense would it make to do that match in the first place if you knew you weren't going to put the championship on him? Why even book the match? Don't make excuses for them. Don't make excuses for bad booking. I don't want to hear it. Sasha Banks is now on SmackDown, and you know what that means. It's boss time. It's boss time again. They got Roman Reigns and Sasha Banks on SmackDown with Michael Cole. So now Michael Cole can go crazy every single week with the big dog and boss time. I thought we might get away from that. Apparently not. Sasha, by the way, she must be okay after her Hell in a Cell match, because they've announced that she's going to be in the ring facing Becky Lynch one final time tomorrow night on Raw. Braun Strowman, now on SmackDown. Lacey Evans, which is great. This is awesome. You know why? Because that means no more feuding between Lacey and Natty. It is officially over. The Revival on SmackDown. That ends the alliance between Randy Orton and The Revival, since Orton went to Raw. Lucha House Party is on SmackDown. And Heavy Machinery, Otis and Tucker, are on SmackDown. There is a list of people who went undrafted on Friday night. These are now considered to be free agents. These are the people who were not drafted by either Fox or USA. Cesaro went undrafted. Natty was drafted. Heavy Machinery was drafted. The Lucha House Party was drafted. The Street Profits haven't even had a match yet. They got drafted. They were all drafted, and Cesaro was not. Now, if he's considered to be a free agent, he should be allowed to sign with NXT. And I hope that's the idea behind this. Maybe this is an angle they're going to turn it into. Fox and USA executives, they don't appreciate him, and so he decides, you know what, I'm going to take my talent somewhere that will be appreciated. And he goes to NXT, or even NXT UK. That's where I hope this is going. Chad Gable, who's been getting a little bit of a push on TV, he lost again to King Corbin on Friday. Chad Gable went undrafted. This guy went to the finals of the King of the Ring tournament. Former Olympian. Been getting a lot of TV time. Fans get behind him. Undrafted. Humberto Carrillo, Akira Tozawa, Sin Cara, Eric Young. I mean, I forget Eric Young is still employed. Heath Slater, Drew Gulak, the B-Team, Tamina, and EC3. All undrafted. You know what? If EC3 is a free agent, he should sign with Impact. The only place that ever truly appreciated him. Let him go back to Impact. And actually, as I am sitting here, I was just checking WWE.com. And sure enough, because I thought this might happen, sure enough, I don't know when this was posted, but they now have an update. Many of the names I just mentioned have now been drafted. They're so inconsequential, they pushed a little update out online. Oh, by the way, these names have now been drafted. So here's the update on some of the names I just mentioned. Apollo Crews, he goes to SmackDown. Drew Gulak to SmackDown. EC3, unfortunately for him, back to Raw. Sorry, buddy. Eric Young to Raw. Heath Slater to SmackDown. Sin Cara to Raw. Tamina to SmackDown. And the B-Team to SmackDown. That means that all of the names I just mentioned have now been drafted. Cesaro, still undrafted. Chad Gable, still undrafted. Maybe they will be by the time you listen to this. But as of now, they are still undrafted, which tells me this has to be part of an angle, at least with Cesaro. It's got to be a storyline. He's got to go to NXT or NXT UK. That is the only possible outcome here that makes any sense. For Eric Young to be drafted to Raw, for EC3 to be drafted to Raw and Cesaro not to be, got to be a storyline. As for the show itself, there was a sign in the crowd that said WWE is redneck anime. And that may well be true. I tend to look at WWE more as some kind of weird form of torture porn, where the viewers get some kind of perverted pleasure out of being fucked every week. That's how I would describe it. They opened with Seth Rollins showing his face in public for the first time since Hell in a Cell, he took the bag off his head, against Roman Reigns, with the winner earning the first draft pick for their brand. They were having a good match when The Fiend appeared from underneath the ring, coming through a hole in the ring. He put the mandible claw on Rollins. He dragged him underneath the ring. Rollins then crawled out from the hole. The Fiend popped his head up slightly, then lowered back down under the ring. So they did a DQ finish. The second fuck finish in less than a week, involving Seth Rollins. Immediately after this, Bray Wyatt was drafted to SmackDown, which either means that this was completely pointless, or this notion that they're taking the brand split seriously this time is a farce, if they're going to have Bray on one brand feuding with Rollins on another. I don't think that's what's going on here. I go back to what I kind of alluded to before. They could be doing a thing where Bray Wyatt was drafted to SmackDown, not The Fiend. The Fiend stays on Raw, while Funhouse Bray appears on, I don't know if you would wrestle as Funhouse Bray, but he appears on SmackDown, and The Fiend appears on Raw. I mean, it would be a cop-out if they did that, you know, if we're supposed to take this brand split seriously, but they could do it, I suppose. I don't think they're switching Seth Rollins and the Universal title to Raw, or from Raw, and moving Brock and the WWE title to Mondays, just because I would think Fox wants Lesnar on their show, and they'd also have to change the color of the tomato title from red to blue. Plus, you know, you got Becky on Raw. They're going to split Rollins and Becky. I don't think that would fly. So I don't think, I mean, we'll see tomorrow night, but I don't think the champions are going to flop, you know, from one brand to the other. We got yet another match between King Corbin and Chad Gable, who is now officially being acknowledged by the announcers and by Michael Cole as Shorty Gable. Now, I know that after he beat Corbin at Hell in a Cell, Gable was in the hallway backstage, and he basically said, no, call me Shorty, it's fine, call me Shorty. So I guess we're supposed to, maybe in storyline now, in kayfabe, oh, well, you know, Gable likes the name, or he wants people to call him Shorty. I don't know, I didn't hear if the announcers made mention of this or not, or if they just started calling him that, without any kind of explanation why suddenly Michael Cole would be okay with calling this guy Shorty. But that is now his name, going forward. And you know what? If they insist on calling him Shorty Gable, if that's what they insist on calling him, then I shall officially refer to WWE Creative going forward as Shit for Brains. That's my new name for them. Corbin got his win back, by the way, from Hell in a Cell, with the End of Days. So back and forth we go. In his first appearance since losing the WWE title to Brock Lesnar in 7 seconds, and being thoroughly humiliated in front of 4 million people on live television, Kofi Kingston was all smiles. He was back to tossing pancakes. Oh, did I hear from people who didn't like that when I tweeted? I put that sarcastic tweet up about, wow, it must really be about the power of positivity with Kofi. He goes from losing the championship 1 week to just smiling and chucking pancakes into the crowd the next. Then I heard from people, oh, stop watching, man. People like you. I can't tell you how, you can't see it right now. I have the biggest smile on my face because I know that it bothers these people so bad when I say things and I tweet things like this. I got goosebumps on my arms right now. The hair is standing up. I love it. I love that it bothers these people so much. And they're just, their head is in the bubble, their head is in the clouds. Maybe their head is up their own ass, I don't know. Please, continue to tweet me and tell me how much it bothers you when I tweet stuff like that. It gives me great pleasure. If you can't see why this is a problem, if you can't see why people would have an issue with Kofi's demeanor not being any different the following week, coming off the biggest loss of his career, the biggest humiliation of his career, you're a moron. Plain and simple. It's almost like he had amnesia. Maybe that F5, it rattled his brain. He has no memory of ever being WWE champion. It's like when Mick Foley, right? Cactus Jack in WCW, they did an amnesia storyline with him. Maybe they could do something like that with Kofi Kingston. He has no recollection of ever being the WWE champion. They had Kofi and the New Day hosting a Susan G. Komen segment, but in this case, they really should have had somebody else do it, or just have Big E and Xavier go out there and do it. You know, even during their six-man tag team match against the OC, there was nothing different about Kofi. There's no I'm not even saying he has to come out and be all, you know, pissed off and maiming people and stuff like that, but there was no attitude, there was no change at all. I guess he really is all about the power of positivity. Yeah, he could go the opposite direction and do an angle where Kofi, you know what? The New Day is always about positivity, and now Kofi is down in the doldrums. He's depressed. He walks around, he's got a, you know, sad look on his face, his buddies are trying to cheer him up, he feels like he failed his friends and he failed the fans, all the believers in New Day. He's got to reevaluate his career. I mean, there's different directions they could have gone in to make, you know, Kofi more interesting. I can't ever see him being WWE champion again, short of the fans getting behind him. Did you hear that on Friday night? Did you hear this groundswell of support for Kofi Kingston? Like, people got behind Daniel Bryan all those years ago? Because I didn't. Maybe my ears weren't working. Didn't sound that way to me. So no, I don't see him getting back to the WWE title or anything like that. And frankly, if it doesn't bother him that he lost it, he shouldn't. He should have nothing to do with the WWE title going forward. If his character can't be bothered to really care about the fact that he was thoroughly embarrassed and lost the one thing that was the most important to him the week before, then hey, maybe he doesn't need the WWE title. Maybe this guy has some kind of pancake addiction. As long as he has his pancakes, he's happy. As long as he keeps throwing those pancakes, he is in his happy place. It's like his security blanket. Take away the pancakes or throw waffles at him and he morphs into the Incredible Hulk. There's another gimmick idea. But this is everything that is wrong with the way the WWE treats their titles. It has been this way for years. John Cena made an Olympic sport out of coming out the next night after losing his championship and acting like he wasn't bothered by it at all. And in fact, he would come out with a big fat smile on his face, narrating the show like he used to. Last week on Monday Night Raw, here's what happened. The fucking James Earl Jones of WWE, you just lost your championship. You got screwed the night before. Well, like water off his back, never seemed to bother John Cena. So why should it bother Kofi Kingston, I guess, right? In fact, Cena would be on TV cracking jokes about it. And my attitude is, and has always been, if he don't care, why should I? But Kofi at least got a win. He won it for his team here, Trouble in Paradise. Let's talk about Bayley. This was the only good thing on the entire show that I enjoyed. Bayley's heel turn is now complete. She walked out wearing new black and gold gear, the NXT colors, interestingly enough. She had a new hairdo, no more ponytail. She destroyed the Bayley buddies, so there's no more wacky wailing inflatable tube men. She took some kind of sharp object to each one and she ripped them apart. My heart sank watching this. I love those tube men. And this woman meticulously murdered each one of them, one by one, on live TV. This was not a heel turn, this was an execution. She also got new music after her win over Charlotte. She was more aggressive during their match. When Charlotte hit natural selection, Bayley cradled her for the win, and Bayley is once again the SmackDown Women's Champion, having just lost the title at Hell in a Cell. Was it 5 days later? She has her belt back. And after the match was over, she got on the mic, and she told the crowd, "Hey, bitches, screw all of you." And she threw the mic down, and she walked off. The coolest moment of Bayley's career since coming up to the main roster. I love this. I thought this was great. This was one creative decision I will praise WWE for and get behind them on. They took their time, but in the end, they did the right thing. This is exactly the change that Bayley has needed for a long time. Charlotte now is only 6 titles away from tying her father's fake record of 16. She'll end up doing in 5 years what it took her father 30 years to do. And her championship reigns will not be nearly as memorable. This year alone, in 2019 alone, she has held the SmackDown Women's title 3 times. Her first reign lasted 12 days before she lost it at WrestleMania in that winner-take-all match. Her second reign lasted 4 minutes after Bayley cashed in her Money in the Bank. And her third reign lasted all of 5 days. This is all just to get her to her dad's record, and it won't mean a damn thing when they do. They'll build it up like it's the biggest thing in the world, but it won't mean shit by the time they get there. But I also think this means that she's being drafted to Raw tomorrow night, which probably also means that Andrade is going to be moved over to Raw as well. Now, what that means for Zelina Vega, what that means for Aleister Black, we shall see. You know, Aleister is also eligible for the draft tomorrow night. I mean, this company used to break up couples in these drafts all the time. I don't think they do that as much these days. Although right now they're actively, it seems like they're actively trying to do that to Rusev and Lana. I didn't know, you know, going into the show on Friday, I didn't know any of the moves they were going to make. I had some ideas, but I had no idea. I have no idea what moves they're planning on making tomorrow night. I know Liv Morgan, for example, she hasn't been on TV in months. I saw her name on the eligibility list for tomorrow. I'm hoping that we'll actually get to see her. And the reason I'm even bringing her up, when she lost to Charlotte on TV on SmackDown all those months ago, she was teasing a change for her character. And for the first time, I found myself intrigued by what they might be doing with Liv Morgan. And then, nothing. Nothing. David Blaine made her disappear. We haven't seen or heard from her since. Now, like I said, she's eligible to be drafted tomorrow. I would think and hope that she will end up on Monday Night Raw. So I think Liv Morgan goes to Raw. I definitely think Charlotte is moving over, and if she does, I think Andrade is also going to move over. Everything else, I have no idea. And frankly, none of it's going to matter anyway. I mean, I know I just spent all these minutes talking about SmackDown and the draft and everything else, but you know, the reality is this. We can talk about moves and what it means for this person to go to this brand and so on and so forth. All of this, in a few months, is not even going to matter. I still have no reason to be excited about any of this, because it is still the same people in charge of the same stars. This draft is not going to change any of that. Support for this podcast comes from Manscaped. Number one in men's below-the-belt grooming, they offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. You know, Halloween is coming up in a few weeks. As you all know, my favorite holiday of the entire year. And I'm not naming any names to protect the identity of the person involved, but he knows who he is. One year, for Halloween, a friend of mine dressed up as Borat. And if you ever saw the movie Borat, you can imagine the scene I'm talking about and what he was wearing. I'm looking at this guy, and he looks more like Chewbacca, if you catch my drift. You remember how Borat would say, very nice? Well, this was not very nice. Not very nice at all. I was scarred for life after seeing that, and so was the poor girl that he was with. Don't be like my former friend. Manscaped is offering their Perfect Package 2.0. Inside, you'll find their waterproof lawnmower 2.0 trimmer with skin-safe technology to prevent nicks and cuts. Don't forget their Crop Preserver, a deodorant and moisturizer for your pumpkins. This package also includes anti-chafing performance boxer briefs to keep you cool and smelling fresh all day, and the Crop Reviver for on-the-go freshness when you need it. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SOLOMONSTER at manscaped.com. Stay sexy this Halloween. Don't scare off the ladies. That's 20% off with free shipping when you use the code SOLOMONSTER at manscaped.com. And keep your little monsters happy. Week 2 of the Wednesday Night War saw another AEW ratings win over NXT, but I would say it's hardly a reason to celebrate since both shows were down. NXT fell from 891,000 viewers the week before to 790,000, so about 100,000 tuned out. But AEW, even with a simulcast airing on TNT and True TV, because they were concerned one of the playoff baseball games might run long, and the other would need to start on TNT, which ended up not happening, but they aired the show anyway on True TV. So you had the show running simultaneously on two different networks. Even with that second airing, you know, combined, Dynamite dropped almost 20% in its second week. Now, that baseball game on the other channel did over 5 million viewers. But that is still a sizable drop. They were still over a million, which is good. They ended up with about 1.1 million. But they did not crack the top 25 for cable that night. I said they would drop in week two, and I got some guff for it. But again, people don't like, you know, dealing in reality sometimes. I figured they were going to drop in week two. People thought, well, after that Hell in a Cell finish, if anything, they might grow. That's not how these things work. There is overlap between the two audiences, but that first week also showed that there was a whole pool of teenagers who just were not watching wrestling, who wanted to sample AEW and check them out. And a lot of those teenagers tuned out in week two, regardless of what may or may not have happened on the WWE pay-per-view. And, you know, I know it, and people aren't going to want to hear this, but I know it feels like wrestling is really hot right now because there's just so much of it. But wrestling is not hot right now. Wrestling is not cool to the masses. And it's going to be very difficult for AEW or anyone else to come close to what a show like Monday Night Raw does every single week, just because that audience for Raw, it's almost baked in at this point. When they have a big show, Raw will spike every now and then, like it did for the season premiere a few weeks ago. When they have a big show or a Raw reunion type show, Raw will spike to 2.5 million viewers, maybe 2.6, 2.7, maybe even 2.8. And that's probably their ceiling at this point. On an average week, Raw is going to do 2.2, 2.3 million. That audience is baked in, almost out of habit at this point. It's going to be very hard for anyone else, let alone someone new, to just come in and top those, even those numbers. And those numbers aren't even that great. I mean, let's take a look at the big picture here with WWE, with AEW. Ratings go up, ratings go down. You look at the landscape here and what all of these shows are doing, and even SmackDown this week, which still has a bigger audience than all of them, losing almost a million viewers from week one to week two on Fox. You look at the wrestling landscape in general and all these different shows. These are not good numbers. These are not good numbers. But if AEW can at least stay over a million viewers, and, you know, this week was not, you know, a good sign. If they can stay over a million, hopefully TNT is happy with that. And if TNT is happy, and if they can do well in the advertiser demos and all that, then that's great. Just like Fox, just like SmackDown. I was just talking about this a little while ago. The logic applies both for WWE and for AEW. On the surface, it looks terrible that SmackDown lost almost a million viewers in 1 week. But they were tops on network television in 18 to 49, and nothing else even came close. That's a good thing. I can't spin the other number, but that's a good thing. And I think that's what AEW should hope for. But I think these people that have these images in their head of, you know, AEW is going to just come out of the gate and they're going to be, soon they're going to be competing with Raw in terms of the ratings and the numbers. It ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. Certainly not anytime soon. I can't predict what'll be 6 months or a year from now. But I think people need to just accept the fact that for all of this talk about all of these wrestling shows, and there's just so much of it. Wrestling is so hot right now. It really isn't. I mean, to a very, very niche audience, it might be. But you can't just appeal to that one little niche audience. You want to create a whole new audience. Like all those young people that tuned in a week ago to see, hey, what's this Dynamite thing? You want to try to grab some of those people and broaden your base. Or at least that's what you should want to do. If I had a show, that's what I would want to do. I wouldn't just want to cater to this little group of people. I'd want to expand that out and bring more people into the tent. And it's not going to be an easy, it's not impossible, but it's not going to be an easy thing. I think people need to just dial it back and understand that. Private Party got a shock win on this show over the Young Bucks in the tag team title tournament. Excellent match. This was a coming out party in a lot of ways for Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn. Chris Jericho. And again, all of this stuff is covered in the Dynamite review that went up. I did a live stream, as I do every Wednesday after 10 p.m. when the show goes off the air. You can come over to YouTube and we talk about Dynamite Live. I take some of your phone calls, so that's up on the channel. But just to go through some of the key things here, Chris Jericho came out to do a promo, and what a promo it was. This was one of the best wrestling promos you'll see all year, although the NWA show from Tuesday, I think, gave them a run for their money, and I'm going to talk about NWA Power here in just a little bit. But I thought this was a great promo from Chris Jericho, who just went out there and just did what he does best. He was talking, you know, off the cuff, didn't come off as scripted or hokey or anything like that. He was out there to reveal the name of his new group. It is him. It's Jake Hager. He calls him Hagar. But I kind of look at that as it's like William Regal calling Umaga Umanga, you know. And Regal has said the reason he did that was because he knew it would stand out more. Because Regal is a smart person. I know, it's a big surprise to learn about that. But when I saw him tweet that out one day, this was months ago, he says, the reason I said it, Umanga, is because I knew it would stand out more and it would make people remember it. You know what? He was right, because there are still people who remember Umanga to this very day. Maybe that's why he called him Hagar, I don't know, but it's Jake Hager, Sammy Guevara, Ortiz, and Santana, and they are now called the Inner Circle. And I will not be able to hear that name and not think of the theme song to the TV show Cops. Apparently, once Inner Circle t-shirts were announced as being available on the TV show, I think it was Jericho or Excalibur, somebody made mention of it. Apparently, the website crashed. So that's a good sign. It's got to suck, though, having to split that money five ways when you're part of a big group like that. I always think to like the NWO. And WCW was a shit show when it came to that kind of thing. The horror stories about people looking at merch receipts. Chris Jericho would look at like a merch receipt, and it would register. It was maybe his shirt or his action figure, but it registered for Hulk Hogan. Hogan was getting all the merch money. Like, there's a lot of stories like that. But I wonder, at a big group like the NWO, as bloated as it got, you know, I'm sure Hogan is getting a bigger cut than all of them, and probably Nash and Hall too. But what is like Scott Norton making off NWO merch back then, right? What's Buff Bagwell making off of NWO merch? I wonder how they worked that out. They probably just gave all the money to Hogan, Hall, and Nash, for all I know. Although Scott Steiner probably would have wanted to, you know, work in on that too. I don't think they would have screwed him over. But when you have a big group like that, I would imagine you're not making quite as much. Darby Allin beat Jimmy Havoc to win the right to challenge Chris Jericho for the AEW title this Wednesday. And so again, you want the full review from last week's show. It's up on YouTube. This week's Dynamite is a loaded show. They're going to be live in Philadelphia. We've got two tag team tournament matches. The Best Friends, Beretta and Chucky T taking on SCU. Lucha Bros battle the Jurassic Express. This is the match I'm looking forward to maybe the most on the show coming up on Wednesday. I'm still sticking with the Jurassic Express to go all the way. They're my pick to win it all. Riho defends her AEW Women's Championship against Britt Baker. Kenny Omega teams with Hangman Page to take on Jon Moxley and Pac. And Chris Jericho defends the AEW Championship against Darby Allin. So that is a full card that we already have days in advance. Cody also on his Twitter announced that Taz is being brought in to Philly on Wednesday to be a guest commentator for the AEW Dark tapings. That's for the Dark matches that are going to be going up on their YouTube channel the following Tuesday, so that would be October 22nd. It's Philly. Taz has a history there. So it seems to me like this is just a one shot. I guess if things go well, maybe they'll be open to using him for other things. Maybe they want to build their own announce team for the AEW Dark matches. Maybe they don't want to just use Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur for that. And maybe they build out their own announce team to call those matches going forward. I don't know, but right now, I'm looking at this as being a one-shot deal. Over on NXT, flip the channel here, Leo Rush and Drew Gulak had a hell of an opener, with Leo getting his first taste of gold in WWE, winning what has now been rechristened, officially rebranded, as the NXT Cruiserweight Championship. And if I may, a moment of reflection for the reign of Drew Gulak, who was very underappreciated, I think, as the Cruiserweight Champion. He was to that title in many ways. I would draw the comparison. He was to the Cruiserweight title in WWE what Dean Malenko was to the Cruiserweight title and the division in WCW. Not the flashiest guy, maybe not even the greatest promo guy or anything like that, but he had a certain style about him when he was in the ring, and you respected him. And so that's the comparison that I would draw between the two, and that's meant to be a total compliment, by the way. One thing that bugs me, Leo, and it's, again, just a minor thing. Leo does this new move where he bounces off the bottom rope with his ass, and he bounces back up right into a cutter or a stunner on his opponent. And a few months ago, he asked people for suggestions on a name. I need a name for the move. What should I call it? This was several weeks ago. And Mauro Ranallo, because Mauro Ranallo on this show, he called it the come up. And I think that may have been the name that Mauro himself suggested on Twitter. You should call it the come up. My suggestion was bottoms up. Now, I know I'm partial, since it was my idea. I really genuinely like the name that I came up with better than the one that they went with. And it just irks me. Because Mauro Ranallo came up with it, so, of course, Mauro's going to call it that on the freaking TV show, and they decided to go with that, but I happen to think the bottoms up would have been a, whatever, it's not a big deal, but Mauro, you're on my list. Not happy about this. But Leo was awesome here in this match. He's a very special performer, like Ricochet. Ricochet can do things in the ring that not very many other people can do. Leo Rush can do things in the ring that not very many other people, if anybody, can do. Now that I actually said the two names together, that's a match I'd like to see in WWE. Ricochet against Leo Rush. Put them on a takeover special. Give them 15 minutes. Let them go at it, in the opener on a takeover special. You don't think they'd tear the house down? Be like a video game, come to life. I mean, I know a lot of people hate that style. They would absolutely hate that match. I think it would be just an awesome spectacle to see. I think they may have wrestled before. I want to say in PWG. I could be wrong about that, but I'm almost positive they have at least had one match before. Rhea Ripley, she straight up murdered Aaliyah. Rhea looked like a killer in there. I love this woman. She used an inverted Texas cloverleaf. She had Aaliyah hanging in the air, dangling in this hold, gave her a giant swing with the hold still applied, and then planted her face first on the mat and cranked down on the hold until she tapped out. So she got on the mic. She is still looking for Shayna Baszler. I would pay to see that match. I'd pay to see a rematch between those two. First, though, she may have to get past Bianca Belair, who said as much after her win over Dakota Kai, which was a very strange decision, seeing as how Dakota just came back. She had one match on TV, and she lost to Bianca Belair on the show this week. And there's a natural story to build to. I guess she doesn't have to go undefeated or anything like that, but there's this natural story of redemption, almost, with her and Baszler. It just didn't feel right to beat her so quickly. But it looks like we're headed to Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley. Again, a match that I would pay to see. Women's division is strong in NXT right now. I have to say, you've got Rhea on the show. I would have to think we may be seeing Toni Storm pop up soon in NXT. You've got Bianca Belair. You've got Candice LeRae. You've got Dakota Kai, even though she lost here. She just came back and there's a natural story there with her. Shayna, of course, is doing her thing as the champion. Tegan Nox just came back. Got a lot of talent in that female division right now. And how could I forget Io Shirai? See, there's so many great names they have down there. I almost forgot to mention Io, and she may be the best of the bunch. So they got a great thing going right now with that women's division, which is cool to see because there was a period of time when Asuka left. And there was another name who may have been called up as well. And that division looked like it was dying a death. And it was for a while. It was dying a death. It was dying on the vine. And they have done a very good job now of kind of replenishing what they lost. And now you look, and I would even argue that the women's division in NXT is stronger than what we've seen on Raw or SmackDown. Because once you get past the horsewomen, you know, who's left? Natty? Lacey Evans? I mean, Asuka and Kairi now are the women's tag team champions. I don't see them doing very many singles matches. I mean, they got Sasha Banks back, which is great. But again, once you get beyond those four horsewomen, how strong really is that division? How strong is that women's division on the main shows? I would argue NXT is a lot stronger. Roderick Strong, speaking of strong, he and Isaiah Swerve Scott had a good match. Non-title match. Roddy wins off the distraction from his Undisputed Era buddies at ringside. It was a great showing for Isaiah Scott. Velveteen Dream appears. He's getting a rematch in 2 weeks for the North American title. He put up a photo of Roddy posing naked with the North American title covering his crotch. Basically copying the old Shawn Michaels Playgirl photo shoot from 96 when he was the WWF champion. Then Dream makes a crack about, basically he was inferring that Roddy has a tiny dick, and he showed a photoshopped version of the image that I really wish I had not seen. Tommaso Ciampa then comes out with a crutch. He grabs a steel chair at ringside, climbs into the ring. Cole and company, they bail. He mentioned Goldie on the microphone before, Adam Cole had the title on his shoulder. So he mentioned Goldie, and Ciampa said, "Daddy's home." And so begins the climb back to the NXT title for Tommaso Ciampa. He faces Angel Garza on NXT this Wednesday. Where Finn Balor fits into all this is unclear. My sense is he'll get a title shot probably before Ciampa does, and with Ciampa they may take their time. But I don't know. You would have to think that Balor came back. He basically came back to go after Adam Cole. He went face to face with Adam Cole, said, "I'm back in NXT. Maybe it'll be the opposite. Maybe Balor is the one who's going to have to work his way back into the title picture, and maybe he'll be getting an NXT championship match at WrestleMania weekend. But there's two viable contenders now for that NXT title to go after Adam Cole. We have Walter and Kushida, an excellent main event. This obviously got over very well at Full Sail. They ate it up. Walter is great. Kushida is very good as well. I mean, what more can I say? This was a very enjoyable match. Somewhere in here, I think Kushida got hurt. He suffered a wrist injury. He posted a photo on Twitter or Instagram, I think it was Instagram, of his hand and his wrist all swollen. So I don't know if something is broken. I don't know if it's something like Cole is wrestling with a cast on his arm that he can still wrestle. He'll have to wear a cast or something. I don't know. I don't know how serious it is. Hopefully not too serious. But this was great. Walter wins in the end. Picks up the win. I'm starting to slip a little bit with this two-hour format for NXT. And this is exactly what I was afraid of. This is why I railed so hard against expanding the show to 2 hours. And I know why they did it. But it's not that NXT puts on a bad show. But that one-hour format was just so perfect. You know, AEW, how come AEW's 2 hours and it doesn't bother me as much? AEW never had a show before, a television show. They started out with the two-hour format. NXT mastered the one-hour format and kept my attention, and I enjoyed the show every week. And that was good enough for me. And now I find myself playing catch up late in the week because I can't watch both shows at the same time. I'm not going to do that. And there's so many other things for me to watch. I'm playing catch up with NXT late in the week. And there are some segments and backstage things where I just feel the need to skip over. And this is exactly what I feared would happen. I mean, look, I see the Forgotten Sons and I skip. That's just how it is. So we're going to get the rubber match this Wednesday between Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. After this, though, I think both guys, it's time to just move on to other opponents. This feels like it needs to be the end for now. And we're also getting a very interesting match between the unbeaten Damian Priest and Pete Dunne. So Pete Dunne and Damian Priest, Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic, all coming up this Wednesday. For the past 2 years, Billy Corgan and Dave Lagana have been slowly and quietly rebuilding, brick by brick, piece by piece, the NWA name, trying to resurrect a kind of pro wrestling that has been missing for a very long time. Corgan has said before that he grew up on an era of wrestling that was based primarily around personalities. Yeah, not so much the matches or anything else, but the personalities themselves. What motivates them, why we love them, why we hate them, why we want to pay money to see them. Out of nowhere this week, seemingly, in this sea of wrestling television that we now have, lost in all of the noise of AEW against NXT and the WWE draft and all of the things that have been going on, the NWA recently had its first set of TV tapings at the beginning of the month, and this past Tuesday, their new Power show, NWA Power, debuted on their YouTube channel and their Facebook page. I mentioned it last week because a lot of you had no idea that this was even happening or when it was happening, and I got a lot of thank you tweets and thank you messages from people after saying, oh, thank you for mentioning this, I never would have known, this was great. So that was really cool to hear from so many people who just didn't know. And were it not for them hearing me mention it on the podcast last week, I mean, they probably would have gone back and watched it after hearing all the buzz. But they watched the NWA show because I had mentioned it the week before. And I had mentioned the fact that I was genuinely looking forward to seeing what the finished product looked like. I had seen the photos, I had seen the still shots from the studio setting, and they did a hell of a job, even just from looking at those photos, it seemed, of recreating an environment and an atmosphere from 30 years ago, from like this bygone era. And I was genuinely curious and interested to see what the video looked like. And this new show, it premiered on Tuesday, 6:05 p.m. Eastern. And as of this morning, it had gotten over 370,000 views. I think the live airing did about 15 or 20,000, but since then, it has just grown and grown and grown from word of mouth to closing in soon on 400,000 views. And it's very strong word of mouth, believe me, that has led to those numbers, because it has gotten a lot of positive feedback. They even got a shout out from The Rock on Twitter. The Rock said congrats to Jim Cornette, one of the announcers. The boys, the crew, stumbled across this show last night and I enjoyed it. I grew up in the territories. I started my career on Channel 5 in Memphis, so I have a lot of love and a lot of respect for small-scale crowd TV shows. Cool vintage feel. Keep working hard. That's from The Rock. That wrestling that Corgan grew up on, focusing on strong personalities, came through here in spades. That is exactly what made this first debut episode so strong. It was not a bunch of great matches, although I did enjoy the main event between Nick Aldis and Tim Storm. I thought they had a good match. It wasn't about having great matches or long matches. It was a focus on great promos, great unscripted promos, and strong personalities. And it made for a very enjoyable hour that flew by for me. Now, watching this, it felt like a pilot for a network to pick up. About a year ago this month, Corgan did an interview with a website called The Ringer. And at that time, he told them, I don't need anybody's financing. I don't need anybody's TV network. I can operate on my own and do exactly as I please. Well, there was a note in the most recent Observer, which was credited to something that Corgan himself said, although I couldn't find the interview, where he now admits that this model is not economically sustainable in the long term. I don't see how it could be. You know, as good as the show looked, production-wise, it looked great. If they're only on YouTube and Facebook, it would only make sense that they would have to secure some kind of a TV deal and get some more money behind it, you know, beyond whatever money Corgan himself is putting into the project. This is not a touring brand. I mean, maybe one day it can be. But what I mean is, this is not designed to be a touring brand. This is a television show. This is a studio television show. It belongs on TV. And after watching this first show, I'm pulling for them to find a home on a station somewhere soon. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the fact that it's on YouTube. It's the easiest thing in the world to watch, but I would like to see this thing succeed. I mean, they clearly have a very dedicated crew behind them. They have a team in place. I would like to see this gain traction and go on for some time and really become, again, in the long term, well into next year, a weekly option for people who want this kind of wrestling to be able to go ahead and watch it. You know, 1 hour a week, it's an easy watch. But I couldn't help but watch this and feel like this is more of a pilot. What's going to be 3 months from now if they don't have some kind of TV deal? I don't know. One issue with NXT and AEW, as much as I love both shows, and we did get that great Chris Jericho promo this past week on AEW in the ring, but for the most part, from what I've seen these last few weeks, NXT and AEW both suffer from the formula of match, 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 with very little, if anything, in between. There's almost no buffer between all these matches. The NWA, on this first episode, had the perfect blend of matches with great promos mixed in between. The promos really were more of the focus even than the matches themselves. They have a two-man booth, Joe Galli, who by day is a news reporter out of San Antonio, and Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette, I mean, this is his wheelhouse. I mean, this is the era that not only did he grow up on, he was part of that era. Studio wrestling in Memphis and the NWA and Georgia and all these different, the different territories. So he's just on cloud nine. You can see he's got a big fat smile on his face and he fits like a glove on that announced team. I thought the production of the show, the look of it, the feel, the lighting, everything about it, it looked great. It looked professional. It looked, didn't look Bush League at all. It looked great. It was almost like walking in. You look at that studio and the flags and the ring and the logos and the graphics and everything, and it's almost like walking into a time warp, but with current wrestlers transplanted into this bygone era. One interesting thing, element of the show that I noticed, no entrance music. People walk out. I mean, they don't have very far to walk, right? They're not going down some long aisleway. No entrance music. Just like back in the day when you had studio wrestling, the NWA, there was no entrance music. You would walk to the ring or you would walk out, and talk to Crockett or talk to Shivani or whoever had the microphone in their hand and cut a promo. So they followed that blueprint here as well. No entrance music. I thought the promo work was fantastic. Nick Aldis, Eddie Kingston, and Tim Storm, to me, were the standouts. Eli Drake, let me say this about Eli Drake. Eli Drake is a guy who I still don't quite understand why he isn't in WWE even in AEW. I'm sure NWA is very happy to have him. He could absolutely fit into a big promotion like that, and I think they would love him. He can talk. He's a great talker. I watch him, though, and I've always felt this way. I've always felt he is borrowing the inflection in his voice, the mannerisms, everything. He's trying to be The Rock. This is the first time that I've watched him where not only did I think he was trying to be The Rock, but about midway through, or maybe not even midway through his promo, he was almost like he morphed into Stone Cold. So I'm listening, and I'm really listening closely and paying attention to this guy. And he has become some sort of hybrid mix of The Rock and Steve Austin. Now, two people that I can understand why you would want to borrow a little bit from them, but I couldn't help but just notice it the whole time. That's all I'm thinking. Like, the way he's talking, he reminds me exactly of Steve Austin. He is borrowing from Steve Austin. And that's fine if that works for him, but I just couldn't think of anything else the entire time he was speaking. I don't even know what he said. All I could think is this guy is, it's like if I close my eyes, I would think I was listening to Steve Austin. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. The guy can talk. He can do his own thing. I don't even think he needs to really borrow from those two, but it was very obvious watching and listening to him. So you can put him on that list too, as far as standouts, but the ones that really caught my attention and that I enjoyed were Aldis. Nick Aldis, he carries himself like a world champion. He looks the part. He acts the part. Again, he can talk, very well spoken, and I can't say enough good things about him in that role. And this setting, by the way, in that studio setting, I felt like really highlighted that. I think it does him a world of good in that atmosphere. Eddie Kingston is just, I mean, Eddie Kingston is Eddie Kingston. What more can be said? We already know Eddie Kingston is a great promo. I didn't know how he would come off watching him in an old school setting like this, but he fit perfectly. I thought he was great. He, to me, was the standout on this entire show. And then later on, Tim Storm cutting this passionate promo, talking about, you know, if he doesn't win this match with Nick Aldis, if he doesn't win the championship, he can never again challenge for the NWA title. And it was the best time of his life, those few months when he was the champion. I guess it was 2017. I guess it would have been when he last held the NWA title. And he is. He's in his 50s. I think he's a grandfather. He's a school teacher by day. It's this great story, you know, of this guy who became the NWA champion and it meant so much to him to travel around and defend that title. And he's got to win this match tonight. I thought his promo was great. Let me just go through some of the other things that happened here on this show. Because they did, you know, again, the Aldis promo at the beginning set up the match for later in the show with him and Tim Storm. We had a tag team, the Dawsons. Zane and Dave Dawson, they came out and made short work out of their opponents. And then they went over by the announcers and they cut a promo. You know, again, very simple, old school stuff. Then they had a promotional consideration paid for by the following spot. I can't do it the way Lord Alfred used to. But they had this spot, and apparently it was a real paid placement here from Austin Idol. Had a commercial here that he starred in plugging his own wrestling school. This looked, at first when I saw it, it looked like a funny skit. Had all these amateur graphics on the screen, but it was actually real. He's buying time on the show to promote his school. Now, Austin Idol is the man who Hulk Hogan credits with giving him the idea for the phrase Hulkamania, because it used to be Idolmania. And from that, Hogan said, huh, and he came up with Hulkamania. He also credits Austin Idol with getting the cupping of the ear that Hogan made popular in his career. Chris Jericho still does it to kind of taunt the fans and tweak the fans a little bit. That all came from Austin Idol. So imagine that. One of the biggest stars in the history of the business admits that his act was in part influenced by Austin Idol. And he did it first. He was a great promo himself, you know, Idol was. If you go watch some of his old promos online, he was a great promo back in the day. Might still be. I know he was serving as Nick Aldis's manager for a while when he first won the NWA title in 2017. I don't think it lasted too long, but he was managing Nick for a while. You can find videos online of the two of them together. So the ad, so he's plugging his school, and the ad ends with him on screen saying, come on, baby, you want it? Let me give it to you. I don't know if this was an ad for a wrestling school or a dating app. It's a little creepy. Eli Drake, after cutting his promo, had a match with Caleb Conley, got a win over him. Again, he looks like a star, Drake does. He comes off as a star in this environment. And that's the bottom line. Because Eli Drake said so. Josephus came out. Josephus, I enjoyed the stuff with Josephus and Tim Storm, I believe it would have been. This is, again, going back probably a year and a half, 2 years now. They were doing some stuff with Josephus and him, and I didn't know who Josephus even was. But they were putting these videos together, and it was just really good character work. Even then, long before they had a TV show. You know, that Corgan and Legato were these things that they were putting together. There was always this emphasis on character development and character building and personalities. Again, you can see it in their work, even going back to when they when Corgan first bought the NWA, which was probably, what was it now, 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago this month, I believe, is when the sale went through. You can see it in everything they've done, every step of the way. It's all about personalities and character development and getting people to care about these characters and learn more about them. And frankly, WWE may be the biggest company in the world. They may be making money hand over fist more than anyone else in the business is. But the one thing that they severely lack is good character development and good development of their personalities and showcasing their personalities and letting us into, kind of giving us a window into who these people are and why we should care. Because there's so much television to put together and they have so many freaking people on that roster. And only so much television time. they don't do a good enough job of that. That's one of the areas, I think, where they could learn a thing or two from what someone like the NWA is doing. I would love for WWE to borrow and steal ideas from these other companies to help make me care more about their own performers. I don't know that there's ever been a time where I've cared less about who they put on TV. In 1 week, I care more about some of these people. We had the tag team champions, NWA tag team champions, Isaacson Latimer, Latimer being the former Bram from TNA. I guess he's no longer re-signing those deals, huh? They took on Danny White and Mims, beat them in a tag team match. After this is where they were confronted by Eddie Kingston, and then Homicide came out, and there was a big brawl that broke out on the set. We had Josephus and James Storm. They had a brief match. And then we had the NWA champion, Nick Aldis, and Tim Storm, another Storm. A lot of Storms. Tim Storm, James Storm, Lance Storm. Isn't there another Storm? Wasn't Storm one of the American Gladiators? He might have been an American Gladiator, too. They had a good match. I enjoyed this match. The story was Tim Storm has to win. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. He doesn't win. He never again gets a shot at the NWA title, which means so much to him. And even towards the end of this match, so desperate he was to win this match and win that championship back that he resorted to a low blow on Nick Aldis. But in the end, he got rolled up and pinned, so it backfired. It didn't work for him. And I guess Tim Storm now can never again challenge for the NWA title. And we had a promo here at the end with Nick Aldis. Now, Nick Aldis has Camille. She's the woman that is, his valet, basically. And they're already building to something down the road, it seems, where there was a point in the match where he took a bump out of the ring and accidentally collided with Camille. And Joe Galli tried to bring that up in the interview, and Storm, or Aldis, rather, would not let her answer. She wanted to answer the question, he wouldn't let her answer. So obviously they're building to something. It was almost like that old Randy Savage, Elizabeth dynamic, you don't talk to her, you talk to me kind of thing. So they're building to something down the road. We had credits. The credits rolled at the end of the show. That was a nice old school touch. You know, WCW, not only did they used to do credits at the end of their big pay-per-views, they were doing it even into the mid-90s. It wasn't just some relic from the 80s. As late as the mid-90s. WCW still had credits rolling at the end of their pay-per-views. So the next set of tapings are slated for December 14, 15, and 16 back in the same studio in Atlanta. I did see some of the tapings, the spoilers and whatnot for things that are going to be coming up on the show, which I won't give away. But there's a lot of other people that we're going to be exposed to in the weeks to come. Some names that you would know, you know, Colt Cabana, he's part of the roster there, the former Damian Sandow. He's there. Ken Kennedy. The Rock and Roll Express. We're going to be seeing them back in that studio setting in the upcoming weeks. I do plan to make this part of my weekly wrestling routine. They won me over with the first episode. If you didn't see it, I encourage you all to go on YouTube and check it out. I think you will enjoy it, even if you were not alive back then for that old era of studio wrestling. It's just a very well put together hour of pro wrestling, and I think you'll enjoy it. Time for this week's RSPW Rewind. This week, I was going through some threads, and I came across one about Papa Shango. I thought to myself, you know, that would be a good topic for this week. I mean, I could pretty much mix them up and talk about anything I want to, but let's see what I can find on good old Papa Shango. And I found a few more threads, and then I found some other ones, and I figured, let's just mush them all together. And so without any further ado, we get to this first post from Matt Kundal from March 10th, 1992. This is one of the oldest threads that I've been able to find and cover here on the show. 1992, a year that I have quite the fondness for, as you all know. He's got three questions. Now that LOD is out of the WWF, seeing as how they have not been mentioned and recently lost the titles, where did they go? Also, who the hell is Papa Shango? Aside from being totally repulsive on the tube, I am just looking for his Elias. We promise not to ever watch him nor appreciate him on the tube. And finally, I need some info on Marcus Alexander Bagwell. Somebody outrageously called him the Ultimate Warrior last week, and I laughed. But then again, I have no idea who he is or who he was. Well, I think we may have just found the earliest Buff Bagwell mention here on RSPW. Way back here in 1992. Jason Toast McDonald responds to on the Papa Shango stuff. I kind of think he might be Kamala, but it's been so long since I've seen him, I really don't know. I guess they all just look the same, to old McDonald. On Bagwell, Otto says, he was the handsome stranger in the GWF. Other than that, I don't think he's wrestled in any major league. Stefan says, before being the handsome stranger in the GWF, If he would have called him Buff Bagwell in 1992, I'd like to track down Stefan. Now, he says Bagwell wrestled under the name of Fabian in the Georgia All-Star Wrestling area, a small but active indie group around Atlanta. He wrestled there for about 2 years and even captured their heavyweight belt. GAW sometimes runs cards with the GWF around Atlanta. Joe Pedicino used to announce on GAW. Bagwell went to Spayberry High School, located in Marietta, one of Atlanta's northeastern suburbs. See, some useful information here on RSPW back in the day. We're getting some biographical information. Back to Papa Shango. We skip ahead all the way to June 6, 1997. Believe it or not, I found very little on Papa Shango from that era that he actually was a character on TV. I found more on Papa Shango in the late 90s on RSPW than I did in 92 or 93. So we go all the way to June 6, 1997, and a post by Jeff Bullingham titled Papa Shango, The Undertaker, and The Grave. This should be good. Herb Kunze is reporting that the Observer claims eventually Paul Bearer will reveal the mysterious third grave to be Mark Calloway, and or Mark Calloway's grave, and that he was brought back to life by the voodoo of Papa Shango, who has signed a 4-year deal with the WWF. If this winds up coming true, God save us. This will be the dumbest gimmick the WWF has ever come up with, and I will suddenly be rooting for a complete ratings kill by WCW. Come on, Vince, you've come so far from your Red Rooster, Doink, and Dumpster days. Don't ruin it all now. And indeed, just to cut in here, there were rumors back in 97 when Charles Wright re-signed with WWE that they had plans to resurrect the Papa Shango character. And in fact, Wright himself has confirmed it. He has done interviews over the years saying that Papa Shango was going to return to WWE television in 1997. It was going to be a more gritty, realistic version of the character. He would have a mask instead of face paint. They created a new costume for him. They put together a new entrance for him. And then the decision was made to go with the Kane character instead. And he figures that there probably just wasn't enough room for two dark supernatural characters. And so instead he came back as Kama Mustafa. And they put him in the Nation of Domination. He even claimed that he still had some 8x10 photos. Some promo shots of him wearing the new mask and the new gear that they had made for him. I would love to see those 8x10s, if he ever decides to share them. Keith Watanabe responds, I really can't see how McMahon can make this kind of decision. The revelation of Goldust and Mankind were great ways to add depth to their characters, but Papa Shango? The Dungeon of Doom did not work in WCW, and neither did Papa Shango. You would have thought that in the face of a ratings war, Vince would create more Austin clones to appease the hardcore fans, but nope. Vince and his stupid sense of humor. I can take Austin in the EMT seat beating up a cripple, which was exceptionally hilarious. Oh yeah, that's great, yeah. RSPW dark humor. But Papa Shango was once before an embarrassment and a reason to switch channels. Now it'll be a reason to keep my TV off. I'm sorry, Vince, but if I wanted my intelligence to be insulted every day, I would just stay in college for the rest of my life. Or Keith can just watch Raw and SmackDown each week here 20 years later. That works too. On July 3rd, 1997, James Fabiano came with a post called Papa Shango Undead Angle versus the Kane Angle. Okay, RSPW had a lot of negative things to say when it was rumored that Papa Shango would be revealed to have brought The Undertaker back from the dead. And a lot of you have had negative things to say about the Kane Angle and The Undertaker having killed his parents Angle. That said, I just want to know which one do you think is or would have been worse? Tim chimed in. They could have announced that Undertaker was going over to Japan to learn how to become a better worker, and people would have complained. Let me stop there. That would have been a great fucking angle. Holy shit. Undertaker goes to Japan to train in the New Japan Dojo. Undertaker becomes a young boy. What an angle that would have been. Holy shit. He's right, by the way. You could have had Undertaker do that, and people still would have complained. Because that's what wrestling fans do. That's what wrestling fans do. Tim continues. Complaining that a wrestling angle is stupid is like watching Power Rangers and complaining that its plot is too focused to five-year-olds. Let's be thankful it isn't 1991 all over again. That same day, on July 3rd, a user named Toxic had reached his breaking point. And he made a post titled, Undertaker Brother BS, It's Gotta Stop. I'm sick and tired of hearing everyone ask the same stinking question. Who is the Undertaker's brother going to be? Why don't you people shut the hell up and wait until Raw? It's not going to be Brian Lee, so stop saying so. That's almost as dumb as people saying Papa Shango will be involved in this angle. Kama is in the Nation of Domination already. He's not going to play two roles, so shut up. Brian Lee is in DOA. He's not going to play two roles either, so shut up. Dan Spivey is about the only person that seems to get suggested as much. That guy failed a WWF drug test. That's why Waylon Mercy suddenly retired for no reason. This is the stupidest damn angle in the history of the WWF, and yet it's monopolizing about 60% of the posts on RSPW. It is ridiculous. I hope Toxic is not still around today to see what happens when any of the wrestling groups on Facebook latch on to a subject or if there's a big news story. No one understands the meaning of keeping all posts in the thread that's pinned to the top of the page. They all feel the need to create their own post. Toxic would lose his mind if he was around today to see that. Evil Clown didn't like what Toxic had to say. Why don't you shut the fuck up, Mr. Wrestling Insider? You get all your information from dirt sheets on the internet, Mr. Smart. Fuck off. Someone called me, and I'm not talking about me, that's just the name that they used. Me said, just to make Toxie happy, I think Kane will be Brother Love, coming back from a religious deprogramming and realizing his place is at the Undertaker's side. His face will no longer be beat red, and he'll dress in a pudgier outfit like the Undertaker wears, all studded and stuff with Batman-like gloves and all the trimmings. He'll roll in a wide-bodied coffin, and the bottom will break out, and he'll fall at the Undertaker's feet, all sappy and googly-eyed. Hey, you know, that's kind of like the angle they did on SmackDown many years ago, where Brother Love came out of a giant box, and he hugged the Undertaker, before the Undertaker beat the crap out of him. I'll leave you here with this post. We'll end on this. Posted on my birthday, October 6, 2000. A post by Acolyte of Glorious Laparca. Titled, You know, Papa Shango used to be a physician. But he left his practice in disgust because he had so many problems with referrals. And then he shows us a sample conversation here. One doctor says, I'm sending you to another physician for a second opinion. And the patient responds by asking, which doctor? And the doctor says, yes. RSPW with the dad jokes and Papa Shango witch doctor humor here in 2000. That was so bad, I could not help but include it here and end the segment with some humor. And I use that word very loosely. So this has been your weekly reminder that wrestling fans, well, they probably shouldn't quit their day job, if they have one. We'll wrap up here with some questions. I'm not completely abandoning the mailbag here on the show. I'm just going to be able to take more questions on YouTube when I do the inbox features, but we'll still do a few here. You can always email me, thesolemnmonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Seth, in the UK, I was recently watching a Vanity Fair interview with Roman Reigns. Why? Anyway, watching a Vanity Fair interview with Roman Reigns, and he describes the referee, the role of the referee, as being the third character in the story that we are telling. And he described how useful they can be for sending messages during rest spots between the two performers. How much importance do you think referees carry, and do you think some of today's referees are a bit overdramatic, such as the referee at Hell in a Cell pleading with Seth Rollins to stop and think of the children? I wish somebody would have said that to Vince McMahon in the back when he pitched that idea for the Hell in a Cell main event and that finish. The role of the referee is invaluable. Referees are probably, I don't want to say the most underappreciated people that work in that company, because there's a lot of different people who help put those shows together every single week. Camera people, production people. But the role of the referee, I don't think is overplayed, or not overplayed, but I don't think it really is focused on enough as far as how important a role they play in these matches. They do relay messages to the back. If somebody gets hurt, they relay those messages as well. You get time cues. That's why all the referees wear earpieces. They can hear things from Vince McMahon or Triple H or somebody in the gorilla position, and they can relay that to the wrestlers. If you watch these matches, you can constantly see the referee telling them, you know, go home, or 2 minutes left, or the wrestler is asking them how much time. They get that information from the referee. You know, so the referee can communicate things to them that nobody else can. If their match is, you know, going to be cut short, if they need to, you know, stretch for time, if there's a change in plans, if there's an audible called, all of that information comes from the referee. You'll see matches where the referee will pass an object. They'll try to do it very discreetly, but they'll try to pass a blade if somebody's going to cut themselves open. You don't see that in WWE much anymore, but in the past, you saw it all the time. You'd see Earl Hebner and some of these other referees, they pass something to the wrestler. Triple H, go back to WrestleMania this year, Triple H and Batista, the spot where he ripped out Batista's nose ring, or gave the illusion that he ripped out Batista's nose ring. If you pay attention, I think Mike Chioda was the referee in that match. There was a brief moment where either he passed something to Triple H, or I think Triple H may have handed something off to him. It was a very subtle thing. But again, this is the role that the referee plays. He's wearing lots of different hats. You know, he's like a Renaissance man in that ring. And of course, he's also a performer. So a lot of times referees will have to stand up to the wrestler. They'll have to take a bump or get beaten up by the wrestler. Doesn't happen as much in WWE as it used to at one time. Earl Hebner and all those guys would take bumps all the time. They'd take bumps out of the ring. They'd take finishing moves. I mean, they would take some wicked ones too. Tim White, his career basically ended as a referee because of one bad shoulder bump that he took at Hell in a Cell in 2002. In the match between Triple H and Chris Jericho, where I think he got knocked off the apron. He went shoulder first into the cage. I want to say he dislocated his shoulder. He tried to make a comeback. His shoulder kept popping out. Think about it. You got the constant repetition. And you have to be able to go, you know, do the 1-2-3. And his shoulder kept popping out. He couldn't do it anymore. So his referee career was over because of that one bad bump he took in that match. You know, there's a lot of referees out there. WWE's hiring a lot of people who are coming from the independent scene who were wrestlers. You know, even the female referee that they have in NXT. I don't think she went to referee school. She was a wrestler. And I can see why they would want to hire a wrestler. Look at Drake, Drake Unger, you know, the referee in NXT. He was a deathmatch wrestler in CZW. He's become one of their go-to referees in the company. wrestlers have a certain intuition, a certain knowledge, obviously, that they can bring to the table. They know what it's like to be in the ring, and so it makes sense you'd want to recruit a wrestler, or at least somebody who has experience taking bumps, to be a referee. Need to take a bump at some point? No problem. This guy used to take bumps all the time. So the role of a referee is indispensable, and they don't get enough credit. Do they, you know, are they a bit overdramatic at times? Yes. I don't blame the referee for that. He's doing his job. That's what he was told. He was told that in this situation, you need to just react, you know, in a way that you're trying to convince this man, don't do it. Don't do it. Like he's about to jump off the ledge or something. I don't blame the referee for that. The referee's just doing his job. But to say that the referees are underappreciated is an understatement. They play a pivotal role in what we see on TV. Riggin from Parts Unknown. There's only one wrestler from the coveted Winged Eagle decade of WWE champions that is not currently in the Hall of Fame, aside from The Undertaker, who will go in the moment he either retires or dies. Why hasn't WWE pulled the trigger on two-time WWF champion and two-time WrestleMania headliner Psycho Sid Vicious and put him in the Hall where he belongs? I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. He belongs in the Hall of Fame without question. I do think one day he'll get in there. I don't know what they're waiting for. It could be a case where they've made the offer to Sid and maybe Sid turned him down. Maybe Sid said, no, thank you. You know, I got a softball game to play or something. I don't know. Maybe they weren't offering him enough money. Honky Tonk Man turned down the Hall of Fame for years because he didn't want to sign a Legends contract and he wasn't happy with the money they were offering. One day he finally said, okay, I'll go in. And what was it, this year or last year, he finally went into the Hall of Fame. So I have every reason to believe that there's no, it's not like he's persona non grata. I mean, we saw Sid wrestle Heath Slater on TV a couple of years ago, I think. I think it's just a matter of right time, right place. Unless Sid doesn't want to go in for some reason. I can't imagine he wouldn't want to. Get a payday out of it. Get a nice moment for himself. Make a quick cameo at WrestleMania where he waves to everybody in front of 80,000 people. I think the onus is on WWE whenever they want him to go in, if they think they need a bigger name. I can't see Sid. I mean, Sid's not going to headline a Hall of Fame class, but he's one of the big names, like a Vader. I just don't understand why they're not already in. Damien, in Woodbridge, Virginia, buy or sell on the biggest Hell in a Cell main event bust. Ryback versus CM Punk in 2012, or the recent Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins match at Hell in a Cell. I'm going to buy on Rollins and Wyatt, of course. At least Punk and Ryback, from what I remember about that match, they had a decent enough match before the fuck finish there at the end. And from there, it was this steady decline for Ryback. It didn't have to be. You know, the booking that night, that one little piece of booking is not what killed him. It was that and how they followed it up. This guy couldn't catch a win on pay-per-view to save his life. But at least there was a decent match before they did what they did at the end. You know, there were elements of this match here with Bray and with Seth. You know, him kicking out of the initial big move or shaking it off was cool. 11 curb stomps and one pedigree later, it was ridiculous. And then, of course, what they did. Nothing redeeming at all about what they did this year. So, by far, I'm going to buy on this year and sell on the 2012 match. And we'll end with this. From Jose, from the Philippines, via Tucson, Arizona. If you could choose one character from Breaking Bad and bring them to WWE, who would have the most success? Also, what are your thoughts on El Camino? The idea of taking any of those great characters from Breaking Bad, truly one of the best TV shows ever made, and putting them in the hands of Vince McMahon makes me sick. Just the thought of it makes me want to vomit. It's like the minute Hank walks out on TV and says the words WWE Universe, I'd put my other knee through a glass door. Saul Goodman, I will say this, I think Saul Goodman would fit right in as a promoter, or as a general manager on one of the shows. As far as El Camino, I'm not giving away any spoilers. I did watch it. I did watch El Camino on Friday when it dropped on Netflix. I enjoyed it. I don't want to say anything beyond that, so I'll just leave it at that. It retained the Breaking Bad feel, the way that it was shot, where it was shot, the locations. So that's my very brief thoughts on El Camino. I miss that show. I really do. I miss that show so much. Top three all time on television. Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, and The Shield. They're your top three right there. If you like the mailbag and you want more, feed me more. It's not enough questions. You want more. I debuted a new feature this week exclusive to our YouTube channel called Sound Off Inbox. It's basically a video mailbag where I answer as many of your questions as I can. I think I tackled 10 or 11 here on this debut installment. The premiere episode is now up. It's already, I think, over 15,000 views and counting. Over 35 minutes worth of questions. You can still email me questions, as always. But you can also leave your question going forward in the comments section of whatever the most recent inbox video is. And I will try to collect as many of them as I possibly can. I'm not going to be able to get to everyone's question, but I will definitely be able to get to more doing it this way than I was before. So that's how I'll be collecting questions as well. You can still email me, but you could also leave one question in the comments section on whatever the most recent video is. So hop on there, leave your question. You can also download the audio if you would prefer to stream it and download it on the go. I'm not pushing it out to the feed, but you go to the video and you will find the link to download in the description. And these are probably not going to be weekly. Although, honestly, there's no set schedule. If I have a lot of questions and I have free time, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to record. And there may be times where I don't do an inbox for a week or for 10 days. So it could go either way. It's going to depend on my schedule. The best thing you can do is subscribe to the channel. So that way when a new one goes up, you'll get the notifications and you will be alerted and you will be linked directly to the new installment. And I've gotten a lot of great feedback, overwhelmingly positive feedback. People seem to have enjoyed it. If you did like it, tweet me. At Solomonster. Send me a tweet so I can share it with everybody. And because the best advertising I can get is from you guys. I mean, I can talk until I'm blue in the face about how great this and that is. The best advertising I can get is still from all of you. So help me spread the word about the new inbox and tweet me your thoughts. Let me know what you thought. A couple of other notes here before I wrap up. And again, this is something that many of you may not even be aware of, like the NWA thing last week. There is a new game coming out. It is dropping on Steam this Tuesday. It is a Chikara game, Chikara Action Arcade Wrestling. It drops on Steam this Tuesday, October 15th. It was supposed to come out last week. At the last minute, like literally like the hour before it was supposed to come out, there was some kind of a snag. They had to fix something. So the new release date now is this Tuesday. It looks kind of cool. I have no idea how much it's going to cost. If it's $50, fuck that. I'm not doing that. I don't think it'll be that much, but whatever it is, my plan is to get the game, and that may well be my next installment of Sound Off Gamer. So if all goes well, I might be able to record a new gamer this week, which I'm very excited about. I've been waiting for something to come along that I could play, and this new Chikara game might just be the thing. So if you want to play it, if you want to download it, Tuesday on Steam is where you can find the game. I will, of course, see all of you live on YouTube this Wednesday night after AEW Dynamite, after 10 p.m. Eastern. A lot of good content on the channel that you may be missing out on. Great content, in fact. So be sure to subscribe so you get all of the notifications. You know, I was invited this past week to do a reading of my mother's children's book, The Adventure of Hardy the Horse, at the Child Development Center they have at the college where she took her creative writing course. 7 years ago, I read to a group of 15 four-year-olds. So basically, it was like reading to some of the people who tweet me, only smarter. But that was very special for me to be able to do that at the school where she took that class and to do it during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. That was not lost on me either. I plan to do more of those readings. I'd love to, at different libraries and schools in the area. So you can help with that wherever you may live. I know a few of you have already helped get the book into your local library and have sent me photos of the book actually physically sitting on the shelf in the new section. That's so cool. I can't thank you enough for that. So definitely wherever you may be, if you think you might be able to get the book into your local library or school, by all means do so. The more we can get that book out there, the better. And if you do, tweet me a photo. I'd love to see it. I will be back for episode 622 next weekend. And so until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. Enjoy NWA on Tuesday. I'll see you Wednesday night on YouTube for a Dynamite review. And back here for 622 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Salah Monster sounds off.
Sasha Banks is back. And Michael Cole could not contain his excitement.
Oh my, could it be? It is. It's boss time.
You know, he's been holding that in for 4 months. I'm surprised that he wasn't like a wind-up doll saying it over and over and over again.
It's boss time. It's boss time. It's boss time.
The Salah Monster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalahmonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Salah Monster on Twitter @Salah Monster.
Salah Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Salah Monster sounds off.